Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, the world's most irreverent, entertaining, and cool internet talk radio station. And this is the place where you can learn a lot about yourself, what's going on with you, and why people do the things they do, and, you know, share some of your stuff going on. And you, as you know, listeners who've been with me a while can email me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com because that's where I'm going to help you out and answer some of your questions. And that's what we're doing today, is we're answering some of your questions about, things like relationships, one of my favorite subjects. Also, why do people do the things they do to hurt us in relationships? That's one of my most common ones. Yep. And we're going to help you out with that a little bit. And also how to change some of our negative thinking and how that affects our body. Huh? Sure it does. You guys know that. So I'm going to give you a little bit of, a little bit of mind-body stuff today. I'm going to get medical today. And also how to forgive people in your life. Also, we're going to be talking about something that I've been hearing more of in my office lately. And it's kind of coping with someone in your family or a partner or a friend who has been diagnosed with or not, but obviously has some of the characteristics of a bipolar disorder. It's a personality disorder, we call. It's on the Axis 2 Cluster B. In the DSM-5. But what that means basically is they've got a lot of trouble going on. And they make life very difficult for other people. And they can't help themselves. So I want to kind of talk about that a little bit. And how we try to deal with that personality disorder. And, if you might have some of the underpinnings of that yourself. Think about things you might do to change and how you can sort of get your life together a little bit more. There's no judgment here with me, by the way, guys. And we don't have a therapeutic relationship, actually. I'm not your therapist. I'm just your gal here, your psychologist on the air, just giving you suggestions about, how to make your life better. Maybe. Suggestions. That's all I have here for you. Ideas. Things I've seen in the past that help people out. How to think about things. Stuff like that. So straighttalkdoc@gmail.com, that is the address here where you can email me and ask me questions. Now, I have a lot of folks who already have past several weeks, and what I usually do is I select some of the most common questions that I get in therapy, so it helps a broader, you know, group of people out there. You know, I try to help on issues that are just general. But I have some really specific, fascinating ones today that I just kind of pulled out because I thought, whoa, these kind of appeal to everybody, and I think we can all learn from them. But these are pretty specific and interesting issues going on with some people. And you know how I like those interesting issues and problems. You know how I like to sort through that. You've heard me before try to do that. I usually use a lot of my expert guests to help me with that. You wrote a book about it. You talk about it. No, kidding. But so today we're going to be talking about things like healthy relationships. Why someone keeps, you know, kind of getting into relationships with people who are unhealthy for her. Also, you know, like I said, negative thinking and how it affects your body. We're going to talk about that as well. And growing up with difficult parents, Who hasn't? Maybe a small few. But every one of us has issues. Every one of us has insecurity, problems that we have to work through, little obsessions that we think about what we should have done. We beat ourselves up. And we're also going to be talking about forgiveness, because that's huge. Self-forgiveness is just gigantic. It's really hard to do sometimes. But how to forgive others who've really hurt us. And maybe we don't or can't. But we're going to try to tell you how to do that. So let's get to it. StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com. That's where you wrote me. And everyone who has written me, I've called and let you know or emailed you that I'm going to be talking about your issue today. So let's begin now with Jenna, who writes, I'm 34 and feel really sad because I found out that a guy who I was falling for and was seeing off and on for 8 months is now sneaking around with a 24-year-old. He is 38. Okay. He lied to me and said that I'm the only person he really cares for. Then I went on Facebook and saw them together partying and with this other girl in another city. I always fall for the charmers. Oh, yeah. And want to believe that they care. But the last three relationships I've been in are like this. We were together and seemed close for about half a year, and then I found out they have other women on the side. Why do I pick these guys? Do you think it's because I had a rough life growing up? Maybe. Let's find out more. Jenna says, my dad was an alcoholic and an angry drinker. He emotionally abused me and my brother. My mother was passive and never stuck up for us because I think she was afraid of him. Boy, I've heard that a lot. Anyway, I think that I have trust issues with men and that I'm so desperate for someone to love me and be there for me. I seem to pick the guys who use me and then move on. I want to find a great guy who's good for me, but sometimes I get so confused about if a guy I'm dating is a good quality guy or not. Why do I keep picking these bad guys? Why can't I see the red flags? Can you help me define what you think are good qualities in a man who would be a great long-term partner? Jenna, thank you so much for this email. Wow. It really tells me a lot about what you grew up with, and I really appreciate that. It's always difficult when we have parents who are alcoholics and abusive in any way. It really messes with our head. Father-daughter relationships are really important. So dad is the first kind of interaction with a male figure we have. Sometimes we just project that onto other men in our lives. You know, so depending on our personality styles sometimes, you know, if we keep finding guys who are not very nice to us, verbally abusive, etc., as you seem to have been doing, Jenna, for a while, you know, it's just like we're used to it because of dad, dear old dad. I know, daddy issues, everybody knows about that. People laugh about it. It's not funny. It's really not. It's a serious, real deal. Again, mom and dad are the first male-female folks, if dad's around, if mom's around, I don't know, or grandma, grandpa, whoever the first caregivers are in our lives, we sort of vibe to them and sort of reflect how we're going to relate to other people based on how we relate to them. So you're 34, and you keep picking the same guys over and over. So just kind of hear what I suggested about sometimes what we do. We can't sort of see clear through the woods of dysfunction in our family. Or, you know, we think it's normal to be with a guy who's abusive or an alcoholic or whatever, like dad. And sometimes we get into these personality styles in order to cope. We become people pleasers. We become needy. We become fear of abandonment. You know, that's because we've always been in that state since we were really young, especially dealing with dad. And if mom was an avoider and she didn't stick up for you, there's a lot of anger there too. Because you were on your own there. If mom was afraid of him and didn't leave him, that sucks. So you were kind of on your own and didn't have a lot of support. Don't know how you and your brother are doing in terms of your relationship as an adult, but hopefully you guys have gotten together and gotten some therapy and talked a lot about this together. So what was your experience? How do you feel about being with dad? Was he, you know, is he still cruel to you? That kind of thing. Okay. So what we have to do is, I don't want to talk about working out your problems with your parents. I would suggest you get therapy. I'm sure you are in therapy because of, you know, I can just sort of see it. The way you wrote me here is very enlightened. You seem like you have a handle on a lot of that. So what I'm going to try to do is answer the question that you ask me, particularly. If you'd like me to help you more about understanding, you know, early imprinting or messages we get when we grow up from our parents or caregivers, whoever, I can do that. Just write me, you know, a specific email or question about that. Okay, Jenna? But for now, I'm going to answer your question. specifically about defining what I think are good qualities in a partner for a possible long-term situation. So it's, you know, sometimes truly, I mean, some people listening out there may be saying, are you kidding me? She doesn't know what are good qualities in a partner. Well, sometimes we don't. We get so blurred by our past and, you know, if we're continually in bad relationships and, you know, we feel like we're too needy and people dump us and lie to us and charm and we keep attracting those either alcoholic or narcissistic or whatever charmers who lie to us and, you know, cheat, then it's really hard after a while. We get really confused. You can't just snap out of it and go, I'm going to pick a healthy person, because we don't know who they are. So here are some great qualities that I always tell people to look for in a partner. Really important things, because the, you know, and you have to, for yourself, you have to sort of define what the deal breakers are. You know what I mean? There's certain people that have put up with one thing and then not the other. So we all have our own individual preferences about good qualities, you know, that are really important to us in a partner. But let me just kind of tell you what I think are some of the really healthy qualities in a partner that I have just jotted down for you, Jenna. So here we go. Thoughtfulness. See, that's a biggie, because here's the thing. When you grow up with someone who is not thoughtful and, you know, has anger issues and is verbally abusive of you and your brother, like you said, you need to find someone who is thoughtful and has emotion and has what we call sort of, you know, some kind of a chip in the brain that has a conscience. I don't want to hurt this person. I want to, you know, raise this person well. So you got to pick guys who are thoughtful of you. And I know that sounds like a no-brainer, but you have to kind of look at certain things about this person's personality. Are they thoughtful? Do they ask you questions about yourself? Are they interested in you? Are they treating you kindly? Are they kind of stable in their moods? I mean, and it's not necessarily that they have to, you know, be, you know, opening doors for you and pulling your chair out at the table. That's really lovely to have manners. I mean, I love that. I think it's pretty important sometimes. But, you know, it's sort of nice to look for guys opening doors and guys saying, hey, are you warm? Are you cool? Giving you their coat if it's cold and it's out. That kind of thing. Chivalry, you know? So if you can find somebody who's thoughtful, that's the biggie. Because if you get someone who thinks about you and cares, thinks about you first, and, gee, I want this person to be comfortable. Now, that's going to sort of set the stage for who they are. Okay. Also, somebody who's not easily angered. This is something that I hear all the time, you know, from couples who come in to see me. And one or the other partner has an anger problem. And the big deal is that they get into arguments. They don't know how to argue in a healthy manner. And the one person who always has that angry kind of short fuse blows up, and it's on and on and on and on. Just keeps happening. So somebody who's not easily angered is pretty important. You know, temper outbursts from somebody can be the symptom of internal hostility, right? So sometimes a lot of folks kind of like shove it down when you're first meeting them, because they want to be on their best behavior. But really keep an eye on difficulties and how they handle things out there. If you're dating someone, out there in the world, see how they handle people in the world. I don't know. Waiters, waitresses, if they're kindly to other people. You know, just sort of see how they act. So it's really important that you kind of watch out the way they express their anger. You know how parents say, use your words. It's really important to do that. Not freaking out and name calling and blowing and making everyone else uncomfortable around them. So somebody who's not easily angered is kind of a important thing to me. All right. Also, somebody who's willing to solve problems. That's a huge thing. I mean, if there's little problems going on or disagreements, or you don't want to be solving problems yourself. So you want to admit someone who is honest and owning their own stuff. You really want to keep an eye out for somebody who doesn't say, they did that to me. You know, I had bad girlfriends, or I was married to a bad woman. My life sucks because of other people. Other people have always made me feel bad. Nah, get that. Get out of there. Just go the other way. You need somebody who can own their mistakes and say, whoa, yeah, I kind of screwed up there. And I kind of was wrong in that situation. You just don't want to be with anyone who has a habit of blaming others. That's a no-no. All right, you writing this down, Jenna? Okay, truthful. Somebody who's pretty honest. Sure, we all tell little white lies because we don't want to hurt the other person. In terms of, do you like the way I look? Do you like my hair? Oh, yeah, it looks good, but I like it longer. But, it looks really good when you really don't like it. You're not going to hurt her feelings, you know. You've got to be kind of truthful with people because that leads to trust, you know. That leads to trust. So somebody who's pretty honest, not someone who's blatantly cruel, you know. Some people say to me, they come in and they say, I really like a guy who just lays it on the line and he says what he feels because I know exactly what he's thinking. Well, good for you. The problem is with that is that sometimes it gets a little dicey and they push people away in their lives. So when you find yourself together as a couple or married and your friends start saying, we got things to do, you know that they don't want to be with your partner because they're really hard to deal with. All right. Also, it's important to pick somebody who accepts you the way you are. You know, you can't change anybody, and you don't want anybody to change you. Now, yeah, I mean, you can say, I would really appreciate it if you wouldn't kind of do this because it makes me feel like this. Yeah, you can talk and communicate. Somebody who's going to communicate, of course. But the way you are, the core of who you are, if you have religious beliefs, if you have moral beliefs, the core of who you are, no one should try to change you. If you have pretty good qualities, if someone's trying to manipulate you and move you and manipulate who you hang out with and run the other way, it's important. Somebody also who is willing to grow in the relationship. That's really important. You know, how can they deal with obstacles in their life? How can they cope? If they want to grow, like I said, and they own things from, you know, the past, that's really important. Also, it's really important, I think, to find somebody who's affectionate. You know, the ability to express love through words and actions. Yeah. I think it's really nice to have somebody who touches you and hugs you and all. Now, sometimes, you know, public displays of affection can get a little weird. I don't know. I'm not a big PDA person. But sometimes it's nice to have someone who is affectionate because it keeps that contact. It keeps that warmth. Even if you're like sitting, chilling out, watching a movie, and that person, you're holding hands for a little while. I mean, it's really nice. It's also important to find somebody who has spiritual or moral values that are similar. All right? You don't have to be the same religion. You don't even have to have a religion. But if you guys both have the same spiritual or moral values, if you're not spiritual and you find someone who really is, that's not probably going to work. Somebody who has a pretty stable disposition, too. That's really important. So I've laid out some really important things that I think you guys have to think about, Jenna. And it takes a while to find, you know, if these qualities are really within someone. So you got to give these relationships time and just kind of make a note of how you see them respond to the world. And you've just, you know, had a rough time. And I really appreciate you reaching out here on the couch. And hopefully I helped you out. Thanks, guys, for emailing me on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com with some of your questions about how to handle certain issues going on in your lives. That's what I'm doing today. And by the way, I've also contacted everyone to let them know that I'm going to be talking about their particular issue. I'm not your therapist, but I am giving ideas and suggestions, you know, how to help your moral dilemmas and life's issues. I'm happy to do that for you if I can. So this was a really interesting one. Wow. I really love this. So many of the times I get questions from people about the mind-body connection. What's that mind-body connection like? I mean, if we are, you know, thinking bad thoughts, are we going to get sick? Are we going to get cancer? Well, there's huge evidence between stress and the chemicals we release in our body, the cortisol and all that nasty stuff. When we're angry and stressed and uptight and our physical illnesses. Okay, so here we go. Michael writes, I'm really hurt because my girlfriend told me that if I changed my negative thinking, that maybe I wouldn't be in so much bodily pain. What? Is she crazy? I was in a bad car. I'm reading exactly what Michael wrote, by the way. This is not me responding. I was in a bad car accident about 5 years ago, which left me with 3 herniated discs in my lower back. And also 1 in my cervical area. That's the neck. I'm in constant pain. I use lidocaine patches, icing, acupuncture, pain meds, yoga. I don't do any heavy lifting, and I'm not sitting all day. Well, sounds to me like you're doing the right things, Michael. But how can I not be negative sometimes when every day is a struggle with pain? I want to find out what you think about what she said, that my negative thoughts can make my pain worse. Why is she being so uncaring and judgmental? Well, I think she's... I think maybe she's being caring because she really said that as a helpful kind of thing. Maybe she's telling you not to be so negative. Maybe that's how she's just sort of padding it a little bit, trying to be nicer rather than saying, you're so negative, get over it, I'm tired of hearing your complaints. She's saying, well, I'm really worried about your health. But I think she truly is worried about your health, Michael, because she's with you and you've had a lot of back pain and you've been in some accidents and it's no fun, believe me. I know. So here's the thing. You know, here's a little mind-body stuff. Okay. So how do we kind of break the spiral of negative thinking? If you're a negative thinker, you know, you always expect the worst, especially... It's normal when people have been in accidents or been victims, you know, and you're in pain and suffering. It's really normal to always, you know, have the what if scenario and waiting for the other shoe to drop and think negatively. It's just the way our minds get ready for the next event that is unpleasant. It's called survival. But sometimes when we do it too much, then it takes over our lives and we're always hypervigilant about the next thing that's going to come along. We get a little paranoid. We're always in fear and very negative. And you know, by the way, Michael, it is kind of hard to be with a negative person who's, yeah, but this could happen or this person sucks or life sucks. I hate my work. I hate my It's a little difficult sometimes to be taking that in all the time. It's nice to have a partner who will hear it. But sometimes it gets a little heavy, kind of pulls on the old psyche. So one way to break out of that downward spiral of negative thinking is to understand theories about the physiological effects of negative thinking. This might be what your girlfriend or your partner has been thinking about. Okay, so your brain takes in and processes messages and emotions simultaneously. Same time. So what I mean is the part of the brain responsible for messages or thoughts is the cerebral cortex. That's the center of higher learning and cognition. That's a frontal lobe, baby. You know about that. So the part responsible for emotions is an area called the limbic structures. So it was once thought that these two parts operated, you know, independently of each other, but they don't. Supporters believe that there's a great deal of, you know, interaction between the neurons front and back, between all parts of the brain, you know. So there's a lot of stuff going on and communication going on between the, limbic structures, the cortex, and the messages are flowing freely back and forth through what we call the hypothalamus. It's a little teeny tiny gland at the base of the brain back there. And it's sometimes referred to as the brain's central clearinghouse. That's what you can say to someone when you're thinking about something. You're going, I'm going through my central clearinghouse of the hypothalamus. So shut up and let me think about it. No, anyway. So here's the deal. This little pea, that's where they get the idea, the pea brain. Yeah, that pea-sized gland at the back of the brain, it regulates the pituitary gland, and that activates other stress hormones, like adrenaline. All right? So this is what's going on, you know? The autonomic nervous system and the adrenaline are kicking up when you have pain. All right? So that's what's going on. So you get emotional, you get complaining, and it feeds more and more, and the mind-body interaction is going on. Pain message travels up the spinal cord, right? Hypothalamus, the clearinghouse, yeah? And then you think, I hate this pain. Then you get angry and depressed. And then you think, what if I never get well? Which causes you to feel afraid. And then that fear sends out a stress alarm through the hypothalamus, which constricts the muscles in anticipation. And then the tight muscles give you fatigue and cramp and causing you more pain. So thoughts and physiological body pain are so closely tied. So, I just want you to know that. And your girlfriend wasn't crazy by saying that. She wants you to be a little happier and less negative. And you got to tell her to chill out a little bit, because it's hard to be positive. She understands that when you're in so much pain. She really does. But it sounds to me like you're doing the steps you need to do to take care of yourself. All those good things. But, you know, it's not a great excuse for a relationship to keep saying, so sorry I, you know, like raged out at you. I'm so sorry I freaked out at you. I didn't mean to hurt you, but, you know, I'm in so much pain. It gets real tiring after a while. So kind of, I would get with a pain management specialist, number one. Maybe you are. I don't know. Maybe you are, Michael. And I would also get with a therapist who deals with people who experience chronic pain, because they'll know exactly how the thoughts go, and they'll know how you can cope with some of those thoughts of going to the dark side, right? So you have to take care of yourself and not be so angry, and try to deal with the pain the best you can. Do the things you need to do. Keep up all that good work that you're doing, Michael, though. It sounds wonderful. You know, you are aware of how to manage your pain. So, and again, a good pain management specialist can give you other ideas, too. Yeah. There are some psychiatric medications. I know, you don't want to hear it. A lot of you out there go, psychiatric meds, scary. But they're, you know, what do you think Lyrica is? For fibromyalgia. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. What do you think, what's that one that they use for smoking cessation? What's that one? I can't remember. But it is basically Wellbutrin, which is a psychiatric medication. So, you know, really, if we have a little more serotonin, norepinephrine, managing the dopamine a little bit, with these meds, it helps our pain. It sure does. All righty, we're moving along. Thank you so much, Michael, for, you know, reaching out on that. And I know it's no fun to have back pain, or any kind of pain for that matter. Half the people I see are struggling with some kind of pain, physically and emotionally. All right, here we go. This is a fascinating subject to me, because I also have a lot of patients who come in and tell me about their upbringing. Now, we talked about, Jenna's upbringing and the difficulties she's had. And this is really a heartfelt issue that I hear a lot, and it's really tough to deal with. And I don't want to judge people with this personality disorder. I really don't. There's no judgment. Some people can't help themselves. It's a psychiatric disorder, and sometimes the brain just goes, wah! And you can't always control it, you know? So I want you guys to understand, first of all, that we're going to have some compassion here. I always have compassion. But don't judge people with BPD disorder. That's borderline personality disorder. Please, it's a very difficult disorder to manage. And it's, you know, it's something that some of us have to grow up with in our parents. And how do we cope with it? All right. So Allison writes, my mom has BPD and probably bipolar disorder. She's supposed to be on lithium and another mood stabilizer, but she doesn't use them because she feels that her constant anger, fear, and depression are perfectly reasonable responses to the actions of everyone around her. I lived in constant anxiety as a child, and I never knew what would set off another screaming fit, including things like how I structured my sentences and how I would approach her so she would not somehow feel insulted and offended. As a result, I'm terrified of being a parent like her, and it freaks me out when people innocently say or write about how somebody will find oneself sounding just like one's own mother. Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. We do, don't we, huh? Okay, I don't want to phone her. I don't want to have any relationships with her until I'm ready to talk to her. Because she tries to pick a fight or criticize me every single topic or conversation we have. I'm really glad that she lives in another state, so she has little contact with my daughter as possible. But she's also worked hard to send us to a private high school, and she's made many sacrifices for us. She can be sometimes warm and loving, but then she turns on me. I can never trust her because I don't know what kind of mood she's going to be in. And I've dealt with it all my life. I'm always walking on eggshells. And I try to protect my daughter against her. Well, I hear you. I really hear you. So how do I cope with her? Okay, here we do. Here we go. This is what we do here. If any of you out there have, you know, grown up with a parent, a mother or father, I believe more women have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. It's almost a given that you've had a really difficult relationship with her at times and had a difficult upbringing. So they can behave in any number of ways, ranging from neglect to over-involvement. See? It can be over-involvement. They try to control everything. All right. So you said, Allison, that your mom has been diagnosed with that. So if you guys don't know what that's about, there's a lot of neglect going on sometimes. And again, there is something going on in the brain that we have not necessarily defined yet, that we have not found yet, or chemical imbalances that we can't nail. But we do know there are certain personality styles that involve neglect. They're kind of incapable of putting other people's needs before their own. It's just the way it is. Over control. People with BPD attempt to control everybody's behaviors, especially their kids, and their feelings, and their actions, to a degree that inhibits the people around them, and especially their child's ability to develop independently. Okay, another one is rage. Parents with this disorder can have reactions that are so not even appropriate to the situation. You're like, huh? Criticism. You know, there's a lot of criticism going on. A lot of put-downs, insults. And we call this in therapy, it's sort of a form of projection, because a lot of parents with this disorder kind of reflect the feelings that they have about themselves. They don't love themselves. They think they're losers. They, you know, have low self-esteem, and they'll really never amount to anything. And then they project that onto their kids a lot of times. And Allison, I think you've probably heard all this, but I'm really trying to make it really clear for you so you can kind of You can listen to the show again, by the way. Yeah, if you didn't catch everything that I, you know, might be saying today, you can, of course, check out the archives. They'll be up on the webpage as soon as we get off the air. And in a day, I'll have Ronan, the amazing tech genius, put this up in the archives so you can find out all the content that we're talking about. All right. Blame. A child of a BPD mother may be able to try to cope sometimes with all the blame that they're getting. It's your fault. You did this. You're not good enough. Okay. Enmeshment's another one. They have a deep fear of abandonment. So what they do is they develop a relationship with a child that's stifling to a child's attempts to become an individual. Right? How about alienation? Sometimes a parent with BPD cannot tolerate a loving relationship between the kids and the father or the kids and other relatives because that threatens their own relationship with the kids. So what happens a lot of times is they do something that we call splitting. They split people away, you know, from their children. In other words, they say bad things about the father, or they say bad things about the other relatives, or bad things about the kids' friends, because that keeps them away from other people so they can have the child all for themselves so the child can worship them and think they're wonderful. It's all about them fearing abandonment, basically. So, if, you know, I know, Allison, you've probably struggled with low self-esteem and anger and depression, and you're trying to, you know, keep your daughter away. And that's probably a good idea sometimes. You don't want to, you know, have her saying, gee, you always kept me away from Granny. And maybe when Granny is with her, she's maybe decent. Maybe. But I would say you always have to monitor those visits. When she comes to visit you from out of state, you always have to be there. You can't leave her alone and have her babysit because there might be some of that stuff being put on your child. And you don't want that. You don't want that splitting. You don't want her to start telling your child that you're a bad mommy or that your daddy's awful or that, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just they can't help themselves. The brain just does stuff. And, you know, so there's some good books out there. I'm trying to think of some of the best that I've read here. There's one called Surviving a Borderline Parent, How to Heal Your Childhood Wounds and Build Trust, Boundaries, and Self-Esteem. There's another one called Understanding the Borderline Mother, How to Help Her Children Transcend the Intense, Unpredictable, and Volatile Relationship. And also there's a book called Running on Empty. It's a really good one. Overcome Your Childhood Emotional Neglect. That's a really good one. I like that a lot. So it kind of gives you sort of understanding. Oh, speaking about understanding, there's a book called Understanding the Borderline Mother. It's by Christine Ann Lawson. It's really awesome. Yeah, that's a really helpful one too. And again, we can't make fun. We can't, you know, we can, of course, we can do anything we want to. But It's really these people who have this disorder, that's why it's called the disorder, who have this disorder really need a lot of therapy and understanding that they can't, you know, just have their lack of impulse control put on everybody else. They have to learn that they're not going to have friends. They're not going to have loved ones around them. They're going to be alone because nobody can deal with it. It's very hard, very sad. So thank you so much, Allison, for reaching out about that. That is a really heavy subject, but, you know, I hear about it a lot. All right. So what else? I'm trying to answer a quick and dirty here because we only have 5 minutes left. So what I'm going to do, let me go to this. Here's a good one. Oh, here we good. Here we go. Here's a real good one. All right. Hey, Doc. What are some of the things that I can work on with my husband? We've been married for 10 years, but we seem like we're moving apart. We're doing more independent things, less sex, and we have a lot more arguments. Period. What are some of the things we can do to make our relationship better? Really a loaded subject. But here's what I give to some of my couples right off the bat when we meet. I give them a little questionnaire to fill out for homework. And, you know, they take it home, they fill it out, And then when they come back to see me, they don't have to complete it, you know, all the way. But I just have them think about answering certain questions individually by themselves in the privacy of their own little places. And then they bring it back and then we compare what their responses are. And this kind of tells each other where they're at in the relationship. So here's the questions that I have them answer privately. Okay. And there's four. Gee, that's quick and dirty, right? So number one question I have them answer about their partner is, I love you because you fill in the blank. I love you because, all right. Second question that I have them answer. The wonderful things about our relationship are, really, try to find the wonderful things about your relationship. These are all positives. You get what I'm saying here? Go to the positive. Don't go to the dark side. Don't complain. Okay, so we're answering all these positive questions. All right. Now, question and answer to number three. How will I help increase our intimacy? You got to think about yourself and what you're doing to push your partner away. So how will I help to increase our intimacy? That's another one. That's another question to think about and answer. Okay. And how will I do my best to keep positive through the difficult times in our lives? And that includes economic, financial, you know, in-law issues, or if you're not married, whatever, you know, stressful issues from work, stressful issues from anybody else in my life, and the bumps that come up in the road, literally and figuratively, accidents, problems we have, things like that. So how will I do my best to keep positive through these difficult times in our life? And see, if we do try to really think about these four things that I have put down and that I give to my couples, you really start to work together. Oh, I love you because this. Well, I love you because this. And the wonderful things about our relationship are this. You compare. Wow, I think it's wonderful because this. You learn and grow. These are some of the things that people haven't talked about for 10 years. Or don't even think about or talk about. They just assume that the other person knows. You know. But we can't assume all the time. That's what really gets us in trouble. When we start assuming how other people are feeling or thinking about us, or because they look at us a certain way, or because it's all our own stuff inside kicking around. So think about this. This is great. And I thank you so much for reaching out and asking this question. Answer these four questions. It'll bring you a little bit closer together and help you understand your partner as well. All right. Wow, this hour, well, it's been 50 minutes. We had a little glitch at the beginning of the show. We're starting up another show from earlier, but we are live right this moment. Thank you so much for listening, guys. I appreciate you being here on the couch. Next week, I'm going to help you get more information about cleaning up some of your own problems. Yeah, I've got a lot of good responses that people really want me to answer your problems and help you out and give you suggestions. So that's what I'm going to be doing for a little while. All right. You can contact me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. Always love to hear your comments or questions you may have. And always do take care of yourself first, and then you'll be good for other people. That's the way it works in the world. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen. Have a great week. Talk to you Friday. Bye-bye.